Our guest today is Herb Plambeck of Station WHO Des Moines, Iowa, former president of the National Association of Television and Radio Farm Directors. As many of our listeners know already, Herb was the American representing the television and radio farm directors throughout the country on the recent American Farm Exchange Tour. Herb had the opportunity to go to Russia. And Herb, how many days were you gone?
We were out of the United States 44 days, a long time to be away from home and a lovely family.
How many days were you back the Iron Curtain?
36 days.
Covering how many miles?
About 10,000 miles behind the Iron Curtain, and the days were a little bit on that overtime basis, except we didn't get overtime.
Herb, briefly, could you explain the communist system of farming as contrasted to ours from the standpoint of independence versus this state-owned type of agriculture?
Well, if you give me about an hour, I can do it, but I know you want to attend less time than that. It's a tremendously different system. First of all, the system itself is so different. Let's remember, we are the family-type farm operation, stressing free enterprise. Over there, everything, of course, is controlled and governed by the state, and everything is for the glory of the state. If you're thinking about contrasts, I can give you any number of them. One of the contrasts, of course, is the fact that they are so far behind us in so many ways. Another contrast is that they have developed some amazingly large machinery, larger than ours. They seem to have a philosophy there that if something is big, it's good. But in the same field where we would see a combine that would be taking 27 feet in one swath, or grass mower that would be taking 30 feet in one cut, we would see people working with a sickle or by hand, and we might see oxen pulling a wagon. It's a tremendous contrast in that respect. Much waste of manpower and of womanpower. And may I say that women at work in Russia is something that you see on every side, and especially out there on the farms. We could hardly believe it, how much of the work the women were doing, and they were doing the hard work, Phil.
Herb, from the standpoint of machinery, is there a duplication of our own types of machines, or perhaps some American-made machines used in Russia?
Yes, the machines are similar to ours, of course. As a matter of fact, some of them appear to be an exact copy of ours. We saw some of the old tractors that were just exactly like some that we have in this country, or had in this country back in the 1930s. Their newer tractors are crawler type, and they're big, they're powerful, they're pretty cumbersome, they're pretty heavy too. The combines, they have not only the pull type, but also self-propelled. They are a little different than ours, but basically the same. Corn harvesting equipment, I'm speaking now of the ensilage cutting equipment, is very much like ours, almost exactly like ours. And the same can be said for some of their other machines. But when it comes to these grass mowers that have five sickle bars, and we saw one that had seven sickle bars, no, that's different.
How about that? Well, from the standpoint of copying our own methods of production and also the improved varieties of grain and so on, are they following us, or are they being original in their own?
I think that that has to be answered kind of slow-like. They do say that they are growing hybrid corn. We checked with them on that many times. They claimed at one place they had 18 different varieties of hybrids, but we didn't see a single stalk detasseled, and it made us wonder a little if their interpretation of hybridization is the same as ours. I'm quite sure it's not the same. They are growing some excellent wheat, of course, because, as you know, Russia has always been noted for its fine wheat. And they are growing some good grains otherwise. They're growing a lot of sunflowers. They're growing no soybeans, or at least we didn't see any. Actually, they have a system there of adaptation of plants, which is quite different from anything we've had over here. It's called Lysenkoism. It doesn't seem to pay much attention to the basic factors of heredity that we
use as our basis here.
We just take it for granted that genetics has to be given considerable stress in improving a plant. Over there, they don't seem to quite agree with that.
Herb, what about livestock production? Does that parallel ours, or are they way, way behind us?
Well, they're considerably behind us in certain classes of livestock, but I would have to give them full credit for having some rather fine hogs. They again stress size. They kept bringing up the fact that their hogs weighed so many kilograms more than ours. Well, of course, they kept them a good deal longer too, but they think that's important. They do have some meat type hogs, but primarily they are the heavy fat type hogs. But I want to say again, they're doing a good job with their hogs, and they raise more pigs per litter than what we do, but of course they have one swine herd. One girl takes care of just 10 sows, and so she can give them her full attention.
What about dairy cattle?
Oh, they have some good dairy cattle. They have some cattle like our Holsteins and some like our Brown Swiss. But by and large, the cattle we saw on the collective farms didn't begin to measure up. I took some pictures. Perhaps sometime you'll have a chance to see them, and I think you'll agree. The state farms, where they have breeding plants, have some very good cattle with some pretty good production records. On the collective farms, of course, they're not handled as well, they're not fed as well, and they're not bred as well. But they're improving.
What about the breed of dairy cattle?
The Red Steppes.
The Red Steppes.
Is one of the breeds. Another is a Kazakh Whiteface, and another is a Simmental, which looks a little bit like a big Guernsey would. And there's one other breed that has escaped my memory at the moment. Those are the more prominent ones.
How about beef cattle?
We scarcely saw a single head that would be classified as a beef animal. Almost everything there is considered of the dual-purpose breed, even though we would think of it more in terms of dairy cattle. Sometimes a triple-purpose, because, you know, they use a lot of oxen or cattle in front of those wagons and carts and other pieces of equipment.
And poultry?
Yes, we saw some poultry. Unfortunately, much as I wanted to, and I was very interested in this, I never had an opportunity to actually get to a real poultry farm. We found mostly the white leghorns being used over there, or a breed. It was called by a different name, but it was strictly white leghorns. There were a few of the heavy breeds, too, but mainly it's an egg-producing project, and of course the leghorns come into that picture.
Now, all the farm products are marketed through a central state organization.
Yes. Let's establish that just a little bit more firmly. Everything is done through the state in Russia. 8.5 million square miles of land is all owned by the government. No individual farmer or no individual property owner in the city. It's all government. And the same applies to the marketing system, with the exception that the collective farmer has the use of a small plot of land, his own little garden. He also has one cow and usually one pig and sometimes a lamb or a sheep. And produce from this garden can be sold on what is called the free market. And it's a very interesting thing to see, this free market. We went to quite a number of them. And here the people set their own prices, the seller and the buyer, across the table where the produce is. But by far, the vast majority, all of the grain, all of the livestock, and most of the rest of the produce is sold through the government at prices fixed by the government and at stores owned by the government and by people who are working, of course, with and for the government.
Well, now, what incentive would there be for an individual to exceed his production quota?
Well, that's one of the problems as we see it. There isn't any great incentive for the individual. They work in brigades. They work in teams. And there is incentive for the team to do a better job, to overfulfill the quota, to exceed the norm. Medals are given, very fine medals given, and those who receive the medals are heroes of Soviet labor, and that's quite something over there in the Soviet Union. And then, too, there are inducements in terms of bonuses for those who overexceed their quota, and those little additional incentives that come in connection with gardens and that type of thing. But the incentive just doesn't begin to compare with our good old family-type farming system and our wonderful free enterprise program.
Thanks so much, Herb Plambeck, representing the American radio and TV directors on the recent tour to Russia. And would you be kind enough to come back again another day so we can finish our discussion on, let's say, the standards of living, Herb?
I'll be more than glad to, but I don't think we'll finish the discussion because that's a long story.
Thanks again, Herb Plambeck. We're very fortunate that Herb Plambeck of station WHO Des Moines, Iowa, is back with us again today. You know, the other day we started the discussion on his trip to Europe, where Herb spent 36 days behind the Iron Curtain, traveling over 12,000 miles, and I think is probably one of the best-informed men on Russian agriculture we have in the United States today. Herb, but what about the Russian standard of living, that is, the farmer's standard of living, as contrasted to ours?
Phil, may I say first, thanks for the opportunity to be on your station and to be on your fine farm program, because it does mean a lot to a man like me who has made these observations to have the opportunity to bring them to the wonderful farm listeners we have in this country. You asked about the Comparison of the standard of living between this country and Russia. Well, Phil, that's a kind of a long story. It just doesn't begin to compare over there with what we take for granted in our everyday farm living. Take the homes. They're small. We would call them very inadequate. Three, sometimes four rooms, small rooms, a bed in every room, including the kitchen, including, of course, the living room. Stoves built right in the wall. Very limited number of pieces of furniture, just nowhere near what we think we need for everyday purposes. I don't know how far you want me to go on homes. I can go a lot farther. They're not painted. There's no wallpaper on the walls, although they do put tapestry on the walls, and they put family pictures and a lot of stress on that sort of thing. Very seldom do you see a crucifix or anything of that nature, because in Russia, religion just isn't encouraged. There is no beautiful yard or lawn or garden, or I should say a flower bed outside of the home. If there is anything there, it's a garden, which helps, of course, to provide a little food and a little extra income.
Speaking of food, what about their diet?
Well, it's an adequate diet, apparently. It's a pretty plain diet. I would think it would become very tiresome. It's black bread and borscht, cucumbers, fruits and vegetables when in season, a little meat, and not very good quality meat, potatoes, we thought pretty greasy or fixed up a little too greasy for us, yet it seems to be an adequate diet. At any rate, the people don't look underfed, and they don't look as though they were, improperly fed.
And what about the modern cars that they have?
Well, there just aren't any cars for the average person. I think you're speaking about the average farmer, the average worker. On a collective farm where there were some 4,000 people living, as I remember, they had two privately owned cars, and I'm sure one of them was the manager's car. The cars are almost exact copies of some of our major makes and popular makes here, but they are at least 10 or 15 years older by way of model. There is no parking problem in Russia.
Before on the air, you said you saw more cars coming out from the airport to New York City than you did in all of Russia. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I'm sure many more of them. Well, frankly, there just aren't any. It's hard to believe for any of us. I couldn't believe it either, but they're not there. And neither are the roads there. Neither is the facility there to use those cars.
Now, two quick, serious questions, Herb. How can we better the relationship between this country and Russia?
Well, that's a serious question. We all want to better that relationship. Naturally, I think exchanges, such as the one that I had the privilege of being on, is one way. The common ordinary people, like our farmers and like myself as an ordinary radio man, I think that makes a big impression on those people because they're ordinary people. And when they found out we didn't have horns, that we apparently weren't quite as much the warmongering capitalists as they had been led to believe up to a few months ago, you know, they accepted us overwhelmingly. They just took us into their arms and to their hearts. I think that's important, these exchanges. I'd like to see more youth and student exchanges affected. And then I think we need more tolerance. I think there are a lot of people here in this country who have a complete conviction that those people are nothing short of vital, bitter enemies of ours. Those people don't feel that way. They want peace. They want it as bad as any nation on earth, and why shouldn't they? They've seen the devastation of war. They know the price that comes to war. There are 55% women and about 45% men. The men have been lost through the wars and the revolutions and the purges and the bloodshed. So they know something about the price of hostility. And my conviction is that they want to be friends. And while I don't accept their way of life, I do not accept their philosophy. I want to emphatically point that out. I do think that they are willing to learn more about our way of life. I think they're eager to learn more about our way of life, and I feel that we should be tolerant in doing our very best before we judge too quickly and before we declare them as absolute enemies or something of that nature.
And, of course, when you came back home, you were a mighty happy man, weren't you?
Oh, Phil, I've been out of this country quite a number of times to quite a number of parts of the world, and I've always been so grateful when I came back to these precious shores of ours, when I saw the Statue of Liberty and all the wonderful things in this land. But when a man is behind the Iron Curtain for 36 days and sees that contrast, and he comes back, he just feels like saying, thank God for America and all the wonderful things that are here in America.
Thanks very much, Herb Plambeck, WHO Des Moines, Iowa, for your mighty fine report on your trip to Russia.